KGRG 89.9 FM presents the ultimate Star Wars podcast.
This is an experience.
Isn't it, though?
Not yeah. sure if it's a good one yet.
You're like, I don't know if I sign up for this. Do I need to sign a waiver form?
I probably do, honestly.
Very good. All right, kiddies. Well, right. I suppose we should think about thinking about it. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's already getting late.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, so
it's past Mike's bedtime.
Almost. All right. So I'm going to hit something here, and we're just gonna stand by. We'll go in 3, 2, 1.
State your name for the record.
Jyn Erso.
Forgery of imperial documents, possession of stolen property, aggravated assault, resisting arrest.
On your own from the age of 15. Reckless, aggressive, and undisciplined.
This is a rebellion, isn't it? I rebel.
We have a mission for you. A major weapons test is imminent. We need to know what it is and how to destroy it.
Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
What will you do when they catch you? What will you do if they break you? If you continue to fight?
Welcome to KGRG FM's discussion of Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Oh.
My name is Mike, and I am joined by a whole slew of folks. We're going to have a lot of fun conversations where we get super spoilerific about Rogue One, the latest in the Star Wars franchise.
I'm sure we'll have that in the title.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you know what? There will be no further warnings, because I've been listening to a lot of podcasts recently where they're like, okay, well, we're going to talk about this spoiler free. And then it's like, well, you know, here's your last chance. Spoiler alert. Turn off your podcast or your radio or your whatever.
I feel like they would have clicked it for a reason.
You only need one warning. That's all you need.
Right.
Exactly. And as you said, Spree, it's going to be in the title. So fuck them. So. all right, so with that, let's go around the room and meet who we're going to be talking to today. And on my right, even though you can't see it on the radio, the Dark One himself, the host of the recently completed Heavy Metal Late Night Death, give it up for the Dark One himself, Killing Spree.
Woo! Yo,
how you doing, homie?
Got off work like an hour ago. I'm hungry. So let's do this.
All right. So moving on into the newsroom, for the first time in a long time, you know, I almost fired off all the intros, but I think we just need to get to it, because I'm with Spree. It's like, I think I'm getting a little hangry, and I think it's just time to get through all this. Give it up for the other half of Mike and Mickey After Dark. It's Mickey.
Yo, what up?
How you doing, homie?
I'm awesome. I'm not hangry because we had kimchi fried rice before we came here.
You guys made excellent choices.
Yeah, we did.
Than myself. So, but you're not in the newsroom by yourself,
no.
And I'm not talking about our chief engineer, and his name is John Casper. hiding
I'm
in
not
the.
Not here.
But no. But you have a special guest that
I
you've,
do.
That you've brought with us
all
for
the way
the
from Canada.
Oh, Canada.
Okay, you can just not do that.
She's like, I'm from there and I can't deal.
No. No, gotcha. It's just too much.
What do you say, Canada, don't?
Canada, please don't.
I love it. I love it.
No. So what's your name?
Jay. I was here once before, a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And
you got spooked.
I did. I got spooked. But now that it's all recorded, it's slightly less spooked.
Yep.
Awesome.
Well, to be fair, I totally ambushed them and say, hey, Jay, how do you feel about that?
I did. It wasn't very nice.
No, it really wasn't. And that was never my intent. I still feel bad about that.
That's fine. I got over it.
But but yeah, so the four of us are going to talk about Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, what we thought about the movie, what we kind of expected going in, what we liked, what we didn't like, kind of the characters, plot holes, continuity errors, basically as much as we could talk about, including possibly Killing Spree's manifesto.
I can't wait.
About the thing.
I saw a sneak peek of it on Facebook. I'm really, really looking forward to this podcast.
Nice. Yeah, this is quite
possible. Wait, I made a manifesto?
Yeah, from what I've been told, your post was lengthy.
Oh, on Facebook?
Yeah.
It was a solid 6 paragraphs.
Oh, okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about now. I even acknowledge it was getting long.
Yeah,
oh, sweet baby Jesus. So why don't we just start with that then, since we've already invoked...
Well, do we want to talk about what happened recently today?
Oh,
you know what? You are precisely correct. We do have to acknowledge. So today is Tuesday, December 27th, as we are recording this podcast.
And 2016 claimed another.
Oh, God, in a big, bad way. And really, it was a close call, too. Like, so unfortunately, Carrie Fisher passed away this morning.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you guys, but I'm still pretty rattled about it.
It's a big shock.
I spent a good chunk of my morning just having swearing fits. I'd just be like, God damn it. God damn it.
I'm sorry.
2016, stop.
Yeah.
Just stop.
It's only a few days left.
I was kind of prepared for it because when she was going into critical care or whatever the proper term is, I was just thinking there's a chance she's not going to make it. Just, I've seen this kind of thing before with Ronnie James Dio when he got cancer and it was like he might not make it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he obviously didn't.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying be totally prepared, but you kind of. More or less expected.
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, the thing that my wife asked me this morning before I left to come up to the station, she was like, so, I mean, she acknowledged that this hit me really hard, but she's like, does this hit you the same way that when Leonard Nimoy passed? And it's right up there. And that kind of ruined my day because, I mean, I'm a lifelong Star Trek fan. So that one really did. And it wasn't... the thing with this that I think makes Carrie Fisher's passing all the more shocking is how sudden it was. It was like Friday she has a heart attack.
Exactly.
And it's the roller coaster. It's like she has a heart attack. In fact, I saw on Twitter that people were like tweeting that she had passed, like Perez Hilton or somebody like that had actually said that she had passed. But no, she just had a bad heart attack, was in critical condition, was taken off of this flight, was in intensive care. And stabilized. She was in stable condition throughout the holiday weekend. And yeah, fast forward to Tuesday and just suddenly she passes away. And it was, again, it's devastating. You know, I don't know how else to say it. And
yeah.
And the thing that we were all talking about off the air was how... this news might color our perspective on a couple of things that we're going to talk about. There's some stuff that we're going to be a little critical about. And I wonder, I mean, I really won't know till we get there, but yeah, I'm just wondering how that will inform some of those conversations a little bit. So, it's, and I think a lot of podcasts have already recorded Rogue One episodes. I've listened to at least 4 or 5 different podcasts that have been talking about Rogue One.
It's a big topic.
It's a big topic.
With all this news that's come through and her passing, I feel like it really changes how we're going to be viewing the movie and how we're going to be how we're going to be looking at how she played her character.
Right.
It also will drastically change episode 9.
Exactly. So, I mean... this is going to be a huge change in the upcoming Star Wars films, I feel like.
Yeah. Now, and just for clarification, she had Episode 8 has been completed for quite some time, or at least principal photography. All of that's been done for months. So it'll be interesting to see if they change or manipulate Episode 8 at all. You know, maybe they do some weird Paul Walker Fast and the Furious stuff where they kind of alter the story to...
So, like, have her die in Episode 8?
Maybe.
I don't think they could do that with Leia, because she's very... She's an important part of... this story.
That's so
and they can't just outright forget about her like Heath Ledger's Joker.
And they can't just like CGI her.
Well, Rogue One's shown that they can.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, let's talk about that for just because I mean that's one of the huge elephants in the room is the CGI representation of Carrie Fisher's Princess Leia at the end of the movie.
Oh yeah.
What'd you guys think of that? Was that something you guys were okay with? Did you think it was cool? Did you think it was not cool?
To be honest, I didn't even know that it was CGI at
first. Yeah, I was just going to say that. I mean, I caught Tarkin, but I didn't catch that she was CGI.
And it took me a solid 30 minutes to realize Tarkin was CGI. Like, I kept just staring at him every time I saw him on screen. I was like, he's, like, so sharp looking. Like, there's something different. And I actually went with a friend, and he didn't realize that he was CGI the entire film.
Wow.
So, I mean, they obviously have very, very good skill. And doing what they do, but I thought it was a little bit weird. Mm-hmm. Now that I know that she's CGI,
it was more obvious to me. Like I made an off-color joke on Facebook of I've had sore thumbs that are more subtle than the CGI Tarkin and Leia. With Tarkin specifically, he's around actual actors like that are there.
Yeah.
So it makes it that much more obvious.
Yeah,
and Leia,
more.
Her skin looked. It didn't look natural. It looked way too shiny.
Yeah, it was a little too perfect.
Yeah, and a little plasticky. I enjoyed the cameo for what it was, the Leia cameo.
Oh, definitely.
That was one of those ones where I sat up in my chair a little bit.
Exactly. Because it connected things.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you have to do it. But honestly, I would have preferred that they stuck it to behind her back. Like, you don't see her face. Like, and the Rebel just hands it to her, and that's where they cut off.
Yeah, I'd have been okay with that, and
that would have been more symbolic, I guess.
I don't disagree.
I suppose.
I don't disagree, but I think that's kind of where we're at with Disney level excess. Is like more is more. More is better.
Yeah.
Supersize your fries, supersize your movie, you know, Disney. It's the Disney juggernaut anymore. And you know, I found myself very torn. I really enjoyed the Leia cameo because it was a cameo.
Exactly.
I liked Tarkin at first.
Uh-huh.
Then, once I realized that he's, like, a main character and is in, like, a third of the movie...
Yes.
It kind of started to lose me a little bit because it's like, now you're just doing it to show off that you can do it. I think it was maybe just a little too much of it.
Well, on that note, I can't remember whose review I watched about this, but they mentioned that Tarkin's role in Rogue One, it could have been done with Vader instead. Do you agree with that?
Maybe.
Like Vader instead of Tarkin?
Yeah, in that specific, or in that movie.
I don't know, because I feel like when Vader did come in, I feel like it was a huge part of the movie. Like, it was the most dramatic part of the film, and it was like, the big baddie's here. But if he was there the entire movie, there wouldn't be that shock factor there. Like, when he was in that hallway, and he opened up his lightsaber, and then it was just him. It was like, it's him.
right.
You wouldn't have that amount of just like, oh my god, it's Darth Vader.
Well, I just mean from a story standpoint. Like, do you think it could have been done that way?
I don't know.
Possibly, maybe, but I think it would have fallen into the same problem of overexposure. I agree with what Mickey's saying, and I think, I don't know how to solve it, honestly. I don't know how comfortable I am with this perspective of resurrecting the dead. You know, I mean, Peter Cushing has been dead for over 30 years.
Yeah.
A YouTuber I watched by the name of Hello Greedo did a video on this. I recommend to everybody listening, and it's kind of a gray area. Like,
yes,
do you do if it's one thing if the actor gives consent, but with like a Robin Williams, however, he's like, don't do this ever. Don't use me in any ads or movies post mortem.
Hmm.
Interesting, because I wonder if now actors have to start putting that in their contracts.
That is something that Greedo brought up. Is like, our actors are going to have to do this, or going to do this now.
Yeah, because you raise a really good point. At what point are we going to see, you know, CG Robin Williams running around? Well, it's kind of disgusting.
I can't remember the commercial, but there was a CG Bruce Lee, CG Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
We've already had hologram Tupac.
Yeah. See, and for my perspective, those subtle things I'm okay with. So that's why I was okay with the CG Leia, because it's a cameo. But when you are a fully fleshed character that is interacting with people and is being a large part of the movie, that's where it gets a little uncomfortable for me. If it had just been a cameo, or maybe even an extended cameo, I'd have been okay with it. But this, again, being a major component of the movie, well, makes me feel kind of weird.
It kind of worries me that eventually actors will, or at least live actors, will become obsolete.
Yes. Mm. Now, one thing that my wife brought up is, it's like, well, these are people that have been passed away for a while.
Yes.
So, like, it kind of begs the question what the statute of limitations is. You know, it's like you brought up the CG Marilyn Monroe. I'm okay with that because it's a candy bar commercial, and it's very subtle.
Honestly,
and
I'm not okay with that because it's pure exploitation. It's just marketing.
Yeah.
Well, at least with Tarkin and Leia, it's part of the story. Like, you... At least the way they've written it, they were supposed to be there.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'm feeling too. I mean, Tarkin, Leia, they're characters as opposed to an actual person. Where Marilyn Monroe, that she was a person, she was a figure.
She was an icon.
Yeah, she was an icon. She is herself. So to reuse her image after she's passed is kind of sketchy. Whereas characters like Tarkin, I know for a fact, actually regularly is recurring. And in fact, they used his VA from the Star Wars Rebels cartoon. Mm-hmm. So I think part of the reason why he was in the movie so heavily is because he has an important role on the Death Star as an overseer. It's maybe less we're trying to show off our fancy effects and more it felt better. I feel like having Darth Vader would be overkill, just going back to the earlier question.
Yeah.
If he was overseeing the project, like, he's way up here as far as Sith go. Like, there's the Emperor and then Vader.
Yeah.
So having him overseeing the building of a super weapon, even that super weapon, overkill. Tarkin would be the right person for it.
Agreed. And also, 2 points on that. One, it wouldn't make much sense character-wise for Vader, because in A New Hope, he's like, don't be so proud of this technological terror you've created.
Precisely.
Right.
The planet, the power to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force.
Yeah.
The Force. but second is, to that point also, Darth Vader is a savory spice. You know, it's like oregano. It's like, you know, you put a dash or two in and it makes your spaghetti delicious. Mm-hmm. But if you start just ham-fisting that stuff in there, then it's just...
Well, to counter that, he's all over the place in the original trilogy, and it wasn't overkill.
Yeah, but I think it was mostly because he had a direct tie to the main character as opposed to in this movie. He really doesn't serve any purpose other than being a spice.
Okay. Do you think that it would be better if Tarkin had been casted by, like, an actual for real actor?
Now that you bring that up, the stand-in to play Tarkin, he looked just like Peter Cushing. Like, a younger... What they could have done was makeup.
With a lot of makeup.
Yes.
Though.
Like with... I'm forgetting his name. He played Hannibal. Hannibal Lecter.
Mads Mikkelsen.
Call me. Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins. When he played...
That one. The other Hannibal.
When he played Alfred Hitchcock in that biography movie.
He looked
just like Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, he's got a point. I think it would have been better to use the live character, because then if they had the option of a real actor and then they used CGI, then that was just to show off the bells and whistles.
See,
exactly. So I was thinking that we should have had an actor in there. Why I thought that they chose CGI is because they couldn't find a dude that looked like him. I'm like, yeah, he has really intense cheekbones. And
he has
like a really intense and unique face. And that's cool if you can't find anybody who looks like him and is a good actor and like can carry that role.
Uh-huh.
I can understand the CGI, but if they have an actor like standing by, Why?
Yeah, well, and,
well, he was, when I say stand-in, I mean he was there for all the other actors to have somebody to look at, rather than look like what they did in the prequels and just look at a wall.
At this point, let's switch gears a little bit, and because we've gotten deep in the woods on this Tarkin stuff.
Yeah.
Were we going to do first impressions?
Let's just kind of go around the room and first impressions, and we'll go from there. Jay, do you want to start us off?
Well, to be completely honest, I'm very easily impressed. I am happy with just about anything. I'll find flaws later, but first impression, I was just like, yep, that was worth the money I put on it.
Is that why you're friends with me?
Yeah, pretty much.
Put money on that.
Well. Okay, so you thought it was pretty cool in general, yeah?
Yeah, just in general. I mean, I don't know enough about the lore to be too angry about anything not lining up, but
okay.
As a general moviegoer, it's like, yeah, okay, cool. When's the next one?
Nice. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Mickey?
So I would also count myself as a general moviegoer because I haven't even seen all the original Star Wars.
Shame.
I've only seen A New Hope like twice and then the quote unquote remake that came out. So basically the same movie three times and then this movie. And I thoroughly enjoyed this film and it made me want to go back and watch all of the original. I mean, I already had that want because I have the tapes and everything, so why not?
Right.
But it made me want to go back and watch it and understand the story more. I really enjoyed the film. I thought it was super cool. I left the theater saying, wow, that was a great movie, and I couldn't help but talk to my family about it when I left. So it had me thinking about the film even when I wasn't sitting in that theater chair.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I give it a solid like 8.5 out of 10. Maybe even like a 9.
Wow.
Because I liked it that much.
Okay. And you've just seen it once, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen it again, but I would like to.
Killing spree?
I thought it was mediocre, like, not bad, not good, but, you know, it was a solid C. It's passable.
Okay.
It's passable, but it could have been better. Like, I thought the third act was very good.
Yeah.
The first act, I was bored. The second act felt very clustered. Didn't hate it, didn't love it, but it was all right. I liked it more than Force Awakens.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So, as for me, I really liked it. I'm kind of like Jay a little bit. I'm predisposed to fandom. I am that guy that will just spoon up anything. It's like I mean, it took me a while to turn my back on the prequels. It's like I think I saw each of them twice in the theater. And because it's got Star Wars in the name.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's still Star Wars. I mean, I look at Star Wars almost like pizza.
Yeah.
You know, there's a...
Even if it's bad pizza, it's still pizza.
Exactly. At the end of the day, it's still Star Wars. So, but I liked Rogue One, I think maybe a little more than I was expecting. I think it was... They pressed enough of those nostalgia buttons. I saw things in a Star Wars, in this movie, that I've never seen in a Star Wars movie. And I saw a bunch of stuff that I didn't know I wanted to see in a Star Wars movie, to where it's like, oh, this is what we're doing. Okay.
Could you maybe give an example?
Star Destroyers crashing into each other.
Yeah.
That was fun.
I have never seen that before. I didn't know I needed to see it, and I am grateful for it.
That was a beautiful moment.
X-Wing splashing against a force field.
Like, yeah,
oh,
that was
no!
intense.
Blam!
Just that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it just skids across the shield. I loved it.
Oh, man.
Maybe a little too space balls at times, but that's all
that's
right.
Okay.
Back to the Star Destroyers crashing into each other.
Uh-huh.
Didn't technically... Jedi do it first, or does Super Star Destroyer not count? Because there was a disabled Star Destroyer that crashed into...
It crashed into the Death Star, though.
Or was it the Death Star? I thought it was the Super Star Destroyer.
Yeah, well, they blow up the bridge, and then it starts to list and stabs into the side of the Death Star. I don't believe there's another Star Destroyer collision in that.
I must be remembering it wrong.
You may be thinking of
I'll have to rewatch it.
Near miss in Empire, where like the ships are getting really close together. So for the most part, none of us really outright disliked the movie. What were your guys' expectations going into this movie? And as a follow up, were they met?
My expectations or at least going right into the movie, because I can't remember my expectations when it was first announced or what have you. But when I learned that Gareth Edwards was directing this, I was hopefully optimistic, because I thought he did a very fair job with the 2014 Godzilla remake. Not perfect, but it was a good tribute to the franchise. Like it didn't feel off.
Right.
Like it was a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
So I was expecting Rogue One to be pretty good, not perfect, not up to the original trilogy or anything like mm-hmm. that, but just a worthy entry. And what you wanted to follow up with?
And so did it meet those expectations?
Yes and no.
Okay, that's fair.
That pause.
Well, I thought it could have been much better.
Interesting.
Or I guess more solid.
Yeah.
Would be
okay.
Right word.
That's fair.
So I went in expecting pretty much what a casual moviegoer would expect, which is a fun story that is kind of a wild ride, mm-hmm. a lot of really interesting and diverse characters, which was fully met because it was so cool and inspiring to see that movie. Like, it made me want to draw so much.
Oh, okay.
Because especially that scene where they were in, it was kind of like the big trading post where they first met Blind Guy. Uh-huh. And then you saw like all those people from all across the world or all across the galaxy yeah. kind of gathering together to trade stuff. Oh man, I eat those scenes up. They're so good. But I also expected like cool explosions and a lot of interesting story development, because I don't know all of the Star Wars story and
sure.
whatnot, but I feel like it did meet all those expectations, because it did make me want to learn more about the story and make me delve more, and it made me look forward to the next film.
Definitely. You mean Rogue Two? Spoiler alert, there will be no Rogue 2 because everybody dead.
That's true.
They're extra dead.
I mean...
Well, to be clear, everybody that's new is dead.
Fair enough.
Bring them back.
Extra dead.
Make them all CGI.
Oh, God. Oh man.
Well, Star Wars does have a zombie story in it.
Oh, God.
That's true. Death Troopers is a great book, by the way.
Even when the first trailer came out, I'm one of those horrible people who just didn't watch it. I had no idea what I was getting into coming in.
Sure.
I didn't have any expectation. I was like, it's going to be a Star Wars movie. I don't even know where it fits canonically.
Okay.
Is that even a word?
Canonically?
Canonically,
you know what
yeah.
I'm saying.
Oh, totally.
Cannelloni.
All right, buddy.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can just expect the basics, which would be Star Wars movie, so crazy shit happening in space. And it did all that.
Most definitely.
Yeah. Pretty much, like, yeah, I think I may have even sort of avoided watching any of the trailers just because I wanted to go in with a blank slate.
As for me, I was expecting a truly standalone movie. I thought that this was going to be an expanded universe novel or a comic book or a video game or something like that come to life.
Oh.
And what it ended up being was something that's so firmly entrenched that it may as well have an episode number. You know, it may as well have been episode 3.7.
Yeah.
And it was way more interconnected than I was thinking it was going to be. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It just kind of is. But I got out of it way more than what I was expecting. Again, as I've mentioned, I saw things that I never expected to. The intensity of the violence. It's a war movie. And,
oh, definitely.
And you know, I mean, you see instead of faceless stormtroopers and teddy bears getting murdered, you see people getting shot
straight up
murked. And, you know, stomped on and blowed up
finish
real
him.
Good.
It was pretty
intense. I mean, the violence was super intense. And, I mean, as much as you can get away with in a PG-13 Star Wars movie that's made by the Walt Disney Company, I applaud Disney for that, for having the balls to show that level of violence and again, to having the courage to wipe out the entire cast. I was not expecting that. I thought that, you know, they were going to get like beamed up at the end or something like that.
Nope.
And yeah, I really applaud that to, you know, just tie it off. So in that regards, it was standalone in that, you know, they did.
They did.
But
D-E-D.
But again, I got more than what I want. The only thing that I kind of also had in my expectations that I didn't quite get is I think I was sold a heist movie. That it was supposed to be like, you know, I guess for a brief moment I was envisioning like Ocean's 11. You know, it's like we got to get in like space. In the small guy to go through the service duct and we got to, you know, I mean, so some of the stuff that pops up later where they're stealing disguises and stuff like that, maybe a little.
I like that, though.
Yeah, I mean, that was good stuff, but I was thinking maybe that was more of the movie. Instead, it was just climb. You know, and climbing and grabbing and getting hard drives and whatnot.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I'm not complaining about it, but it was something that was kind of in my expectations a little bit. This movie surprised me at least three different times where my wife told me later, like she told me there were times where I adjusted myself in my seat. Like I would, you know, we went to a theater where there's like those luxury recliner things.
Yeah, same.
I think they all have that now.
Anymore, yeah. And that's fine because it's assigned seating and you don't have to fight with nobody.
I didn't go to one of those. I feel like I should
it's
have.
It's nice though.
You need to.
It's nice though, except for when you're bringing in a one of those gift certificate coupons, like one free admission.
Yeah.
And it's like, you think, okay, I'm going to go see a free movie. Nope, you got to pay a convenience fee.
You got to pay like, $3 to cover the difference.
Just bump up the goddamn ticket price.
Exactly. That was a good snort, by the way. But there were a few times where I like sat up, like unreclined my recliner and leaned forward and I'm just like, you have my attention. Okay. And yeah, stuff I didn't see coming, like CG Tarkin. I mean when I saw his reflection in the glass,
yeah.
I thought that was all we were gonna do. And then he turned around, I'm like, oh my god, it's CG Tarkin.
Oh my god.
And then he didn't go away and spent a third of the movie in there. But that was just an example of something that truly surprised me. I didn't know that.
I really liked the characters and I liked how diverse they were.
Good call.
I loved every single one of them and I wasn't expecting some of them to be there and I wasn't expecting to love them as much as I did, but I came out of that movie wanting to learn more about every one of those characters and wanting to draw them in some way or form. And I thought that was really, really cool. It was really inspiring. I also really like the stormtroopers and like the death troopers or whatever.
Yeah.
They were so hardcore looking and I loved it. I know, but we're probably never going to see them again. But every time I saw them, I was like, so cool. And yeah. Who's that? What's the group of folks that dress up as the stormtroopers? 501st?
Oh, yeah. We saw them at Jet City Comic
Show. I want
yeah.
them to do some of those costumes.
Oh, you know you're going to see some Death Troopers.
I can't wait. It's going to be so cool. So that's what I like the most. I like the characters and I like the costume designs a lot, which I feel like I say most often when I talk about movies.
Sure. But I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, really some really cool character designs. How about you, Jay?
What did you like, buddy?
I don't know. Like, I'm pretty easy. No, I don't. Just like as a major point for the entire thing, I think what I really liked was how it all wrapped up in the end.
Mm. Yeah,
and this is kind of a personal thing, but and other people might read it differently. But I felt like this is one of those few movies that didn't actually have a shoehorned love interest.
Right,
like her and oh god, I'm
Cassian.
Terrible. With me. Yes.
I actually forgot he was kind of in the movie.
Oh no!
Because he was.
You said you loved the characters.
Oh, I do. No. I thought there's so many characters. I just remember him as tough guy with accent.
Yeah. Tough dude with the accent.
There we go.
Tough dude with the accent.
That's his name now.
Girl. Tough guy with accent.
Captain Tough Guy.
Captain Tough Guy.
So do we call him Schwarzenegger or Stallone? Tough guys with accents.
Stallone.
Fair enough. Mexican Stallone.
Stallone. I just remember that he was like super hardcore and like, I did so many things I shouldn't have. I'm like, whoa, bud.
Like, dude, same, but we don't all have to brag about it. I too ate a whole box of candy. Calm down.
Oh my god.
Oh.
Anyways, yeah, it's a stupid little point, but one of my personal favorite things is how they didn't have the whole shoehorned love interest that seems to pop up all over the place. they were clearly very close, and they spent their last moments before everybody died on the beach just having a friendship, which I think was better for her because she'd clearly lived her entire life alone and very much isolated from everyone else.
Yeah, it's very consistent.
Yeah, to finally come together and find somebody she trusts with her life, even though everybody dies in the end.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, it's just one of those little things.
Oh, man. I mean, I liked a lot. I mean, I liked the connectivity. I liked the Easter eggs, the nods. But really just I liked that it was a visual spectacle on par with what we've seen in Star Wars before and pushed that much further. I mean, again, you have
an entire planet rippling after being shot with a Death Star.
Yeah.
And, that was cool.
And while not actually exploding and all
that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the special effects were just
top
spectacular.
Notch.
Spectacular. And the scenery and, I mean, all of it was really, really great.
So, I like the character K2SO. I like him as a droid character more than C-3PO.
But a
friend pointed out to me, K2 isn't going to live long enough to become annoying like C-3PO.
Right.
And, like I said, I like the third act. I like that Rogue One avoided what a lot of prequels do when introducing new characters and they never show up again.
Yeah.
Just kill them all off.
That's one way to deal with it.
And I got a kick out of this.
Yeah.
They introduced a new species of horrible hentai tentacle rape monster.
Oh, my God. I knew that you and I were going to talk about that. So basically, the pilot guy gets basically like this horrible hentai.
He gets mind fucked.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
You remember that?
I missed that.
Yeah.
I'm glad I did.
As the tentacles were going over, that dude is like, I've been on the internet long enough to know what that reminds me of.
Oh, man, I'm glad I missed that.
Thank you, Japan. Yeah.
You know what? Those,
thank you,
and,
Japan.
And those tendrils were
tendrils.
They were uncomfortably phallic. Because they're all, like, all over his face and stuff.
Oh, can we not?
Yeah, but, yeah, good pull, you know.
Zero out of ten time
these,
for that guy, for sure.
So apparently these modern Star Wars movies have two things in common. They have horrible hentai monsters, and they have going to light speed from orbit, apparently. Or from Planetfall. It's,
oh, yeah.
And,
that's weird.
Another thing that I appreciated was, have you guys seen the Gareth Edwards Godzilla remake?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
So you notice how most of the monster fights, they were shot from the ground as if, like, from a person's perspective rather than, you know, the monsters.
Yeah, it makes it a lot more intense.
Yeah, he did that again with the, at least the AT-AT battle, and I really appreciated that it felt like you were, or he was trying to go for you were there.
Yeah,
you're there,
you're
type
right.
Of.
It makes it that much more intimidating to be looking up at those things.
Yeah. So, Spree, you have the floor. Let's start you off with what didn't you like?
I felt...
It's time.
The cameos, to me, the cameos felt ham-fisted for the sake of member berries.
Yeah,
because to me, a movie that relies on nostalgia is a hollow movie.
Yeah.
I understand that when you're doing a Star Wars movie, there's stuff you have to have in there or characters and what have you. But I'd rather it have been handled like 20th Century Fox is doing with the new Planet of the Apes movies.
Uh-huh.
Rise has a good chunk of Easter eggs. That
sure.
Some of them are blatantly obvious, like the get your filthy paws off me, you damn dirty ape line.
Yeah.
And others are a little more subtle. However, the story of the movie does not rely on those. Mm-hmm. It just has a stronger characters, stronger story. It just handled better.
Yeah.
And I was going to bring up Jurassic World also, but Jurassic World kind of walks the line of relying on them or not.
Yeah, it's there, but it doesn't bash you about the face and head about it. So, can you clarify what member berries are?
Oh, for those who haven't watched this season of South Park?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, member berries are...
Thanks, like, Mike.
It's just a funny way of remember the Death Star, remember the Cantina. It's nostalgia.
Okay.
Oh, I think I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it's nostalgia for nostalgia's sake.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's what it is. Now on with that point, Spree, I don't precisely disagree with you, because like I was of two minds. I really enjoyed the callbacks and cameos and all of that, but I also simultaneously acknowledged that it was a bit much.
Well, the one that kind of makes me feel that way is the one with, well, you know the characters' names. Yeah. I don't. The dudes that harass Luke in the cantina scene, like Pigface and Spiderhead.
He doesn't like you. I don't like you. You know,
yeah. I don't like you either.
That reminded me of C-3PO in episode 1. Totally unnecessary. Yeah, didn't need to happen.
Just crammed in there. And it creates kind of a weird continuity thing, because it's like, okay, so we're going to hassle Captain Tough Guy, and then now we need to go in a spaceship and beat feet over to Tatooine because we've got a meeting with to get our arms chopped off by Obi-Wan in like 45 minutes, so we gotta get there real quick. I mean you think about that, they have to travel across the stars, you know, to really get the movie to line back up. Very self-indulgent, but I dig it. The thing that really struck me about Rogue One is that under Disney control, this is a Marvel movie. Think about it. With all of the shoehorned, ham-fisted, let's call back to everything, everything's connected. I was waiting for Thanos to come out and grab an Infinity Gauntlet and talk about doing it himself and whatnot.
I disagree a little bit there.
Okay.
Like to join.
When Disney started doing these Marvel films, they weren't connected. Well, I mean, they were, but they hadn't on screen weren't connected.
Uh-huh.
So, Iron Man, Captain America, they all had their individual movies where they got to build these characters, and they weren't you had some subtle post-credit stuff that ties them together, but
yeah.
The movie itself wasn't, or the movies themselves weren't necessarily tied together directly.
Yeah.
It wasn't until 4, which was the nice bow on top of the present.
I get you. And you know, I mean this is way
I mean off. later on in the series, yeah, I would agree with you there, but...
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I mean, not to get way too far off topic, but Avengers Age of Ultron is basically an advertisement for the next dozen Marvel movies. And all I was getting at is, like, in Rogue One with a lot of this, it's like, because they even call out to Star Wars Rebels. This chopper shows up, the ghost is seen twice, and they make a reference to Hera's character. She's General Syndulla.
Yeah, my sister kept going like, "Oh, I get."
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, I'm happy to know that a piece of the prequels is now dead, or
what's
confirmed
that?
Dead. Jimmy Smith's character, Leia's adopted father.
Uh huh.
It's just another representation of the prequels. It's like, yep, that's gone, dead. Fuck the prequels.
Yeah. See, I was okay with Jimmy Smith showing up.
No, I
thought it was great. It ties it all together.
No, I don't disagree with you on that. Uh-huh. But it's just kind of like, it just shows how much I don't like the prequels.
Okay, I get you. See, I felt that Jimmy Smith was wasted in Revenge of the Sith, and here he actually gets to be Bail Organa for a few. I kind of dug that, because yeah. I like Jimmy Smith, but...
But Disney's willingness to use CG characters like this... It disappoints me in that we could have gotten the episode 7 that focused on a much more interesting time period than what we got. The immediate aftermath of the Battle of Endor. The struggle, or the crumbling of the Empire.
Yeah, you're not wrong. The thing is, though, is that all of your principal actors are now 30 years older.
But
so
again,
you can't have it both ways.
Well, Disney is showing us that they're willing to do this.
Yeah, fair enough. I get you. See, now, it's interesting. Again, I don't want to bemoan the point of the CG characters, but one thing Disney's done this before, and we've seen this incrementally. The first time we saw it was with a computer-generated, de-aged Jeff Bridges in Tron Legacy.
Mm.
I don't know, 8-9 years ago. And it looked really plasticky, but it looked okay. It was one of those things where I'm like, this is fine. I see what you're doing. You're not there technologically yet, but that's kind of cool. And Jeff Bridges was in that movie.
Mm.
So you have like the young version that's done in computer, and then you have the old version. And Jeff Bridges actually did the performance capture for his younger version, and then they just did CG.
That's cool.
And then, yeah, it was neat. And it made sense because the actor wasn't dead. Earlier this year in Captain America Civil War, there's a sequence where a less than zero era Robert Downey Jr. shows up. That's, again, computer de-aged, looking like he did in 1984. Mm. And it's a quick sequence. But again, I felt then what I felt about the CG characters in this movie is like, Disney's like, look what we can do. We can raise the dead.
Yeah.
Again, I'm repeating myself, and I apologize. But basically, in those other examples I gave, it's subtle and it suits the story. Here, it's
a huge part of the story,
exactly.
Which I think is what's bothering you guys so much.
Okay, Mickey, we're on dislikes.
Okay, so I guess what I have to dislike about the film is that there wasn't a lot of character development for some of the characters.
Yeah.
The characters like Blind Guy and also Blind Guy's assistant. Why are they together? Also, how did Blind Guy get blind and why is he so cool with the Force? And I have so many questions about these characters that will never be answered because they dead. So,
extra dead.
Crispy dead.
I want to add to that.
Yeah,
sure.
Go ahead.
I forget his name, the guy that was supposed to assassinate the father.
Cassian, wasn't it?
Yeah, we determined
Cassian.
Captain Cassian Andor, a.k.a. Captain, what was he?
Dangerous and accented or something like
dangerous
that.
Dangerous and accented, yeah.
That dude, yeah.
Captain Tough Guy, that's what
Captain Tough Guy. Well, with an accent.
Well, earlier it was mentioned the whole, I've done things for the Rebellion. It's like, okay, what did you do?
He murdered that guy in the alley.
Who hasn't murdered somebody in the Rebellion?
No. that would have been a perfect point, opportunity to give a little backstory and for What's-Her-Face to feel a little more connection to him, to understand his, where he's coming from.
Okay.
We don't get that. We're told that he's done bad things. We're not shown.
It's not as ham-fisted as just blatant as there was this one character in Suicide Squad where they literally told her backstory. Like, a character was just saying she does this and this because of this. It's like, yeah, but why can't she tell me that? So I feel like there are some characters here. And Mike, now that you said it's basically a Marvel movie, I'm shook. It's like, oh my god, you're right.
Your worldview has shifted.
Wow. Oh my god.
Could be worse. Could be one of those grim ass DC movies. And I saw a meme running around. It was like, it was a picture of Suicide Squad, and it says Suicide Squad ? Then it's the cast of Rogue One. That's cute.
Oh my god.
Because there's no suicide in the Suicide Squad. Nobody dies except for that one dude who climbs really good. R.I.P. that guy. Whatever.
R.I.P. that guy.
Nice to know the internet still doesn't understand things.
Yeah.
Shout out to the internet. Call me internet.
There you go.
But what I disliked was that we didn't get the backstory of some of the most interesting characters in the film, I thought.
Okay.
So it made me want more, but I know that there's not going to be more because they're extra crispy. So,
well, this is Disney, and they said they're going to do yearly Star Wars movies, so we might get one of those another prequel to a prequel movie.
I am hoping for that, actually, because I want to know about these dudes.
See, I want to see, like, maybe, like...
Why do you like that?
or more likely, they'll probably do Marvel comics or something like that.
Yeah, totally.
Or novels.
Which is fine because those Marvel comics are really good. The current ones, like again, I keep flirting with this whole Vader Unleashed conversation, but there is a recently concluded Marvel comic series about Darth Vader, and basically it's like that hallway scene for 25 issues of a comic book.
I'm here for
it. It's all that.
Sign me up.
It's great. Yeah, Marvel's Darth Vader.
Good.
Check it out.
There was definitely a lot of really interesting characters, but because there were so many of them, it was just kind of, we're going to skim right over these really quick, and you can be left wondering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much my only issue with it, is particularly the blind dude and his buddy. It's like, there's something really interesting going on here, and
right?
I want to know what that's all about.
How did they meet? Are they best friends?
I'm a little bit curious as
that's the thing about side characters. They're not the ones that the story's about.
Oh,
so
no.
Hey, side characters are who my heart is about.
Fair enough, yeah.
Han Solo was the greatest side character.
It's true.
Okay, I won't argue that one.
You know, and we can't ship that because Hunter's already shipped it. So sorry. You can't take that. So as for me, things I didn't like, a lot of planet hopping.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Oh, that was dizzying.
And one thing that I did appreciate, though, and I think maybe they figured this out after they watched like an early cut of the movie, is like those title cards.
Where they told you where they were?
How come they didn't do that for the planet that Darth Vader's castle was on?
That's a really good question.
That's a mystery.
That's the
Well, no. They confirmed that it's the planet that he got burnt to a crisp on, and I think it was like the art
Mustafar.
Book or something like that.
Mustafar.
A king.
Yeah. Oh man, if I was a Dark Lord of the Sith, I would have a moody emo castle too, full of hot lava.
So I'd assume you would have a shelf full of Tolkien novels.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Vader loves Lord of the Rings.
Loves those Lord of the Rings.
So, he must have saw Two Towers like, I want that. Gimme.
I need that. He's like, want. But really, yeah, I mean, It was just kind of like the dizzying pace. We're going here, we're going there, we have to go back. Why does everyone want to go back to Jakku? And, you know, all that. Fortunately, nobody wanted to go back to Jedha after that place got smoked like a delicious salmon.
Well, now we're talking about planet hopping. Something I kind of wish they did.
Uh-huh.
They said they were were visiting a Empire prison camp or labor camp, whatever it was. We don't see it.
Oh, that's... Oh, my God,
I would have loved to have seen, you know, an example of the oppressive nature of the Empire.
Mm. Yeah, all you really get to see is...
We just see a truck and the inside of a prison.
But, yeah, you don't really get to see, other than the violence, you know, like, carried out by these death troopers and stormtroopers that can aim. aside from that, you don't really get to see the true oppression of the Empire. You're not wrong on that.
Mm.
But, not to go too far off track, concerning the death troopers.
Yeah.
Are they robots? Because they sound like robots.
Nah, see, I think that's just the maybe like their radio frequency or something. But no, I don't think they're robots.
I don't think it's their robots.
Well, because
they move very differently.
Well, and they get killed at some point. I mean, like, some of them, I think, get shot and fall down.
Well, K2 got shot and fell down.
He got shot K2. A lot.
What about C-3PO? He got shot and fell in Empire.
You know, it's funny, since we're talking about Death Troopers, and this is going to transition us relatively nicely into characters, but, you know, one of the things, it's like, well, you know, you don't see Death Troopers in the regular movie because they're Krennic's dudes, and they all dead. Well, that's tied off.
Has that been confirmed anywhere, or is that just speculation?
I'm just supposing. Because, yeah, it's like, any aspect of this movie, like, you know, you see several different styles of stormtroopers, not just the death troopers. You also see some like desert troopers and some like, you know, modified scout troopers and things like that.
Yeah, so cool.
None of which appear anywhere else, and I think that's okay because basically that whole installation got tied off.
Yeah,
I'm okay with it.
Well, I figured.
Yeah, well, I'm okay with.
Well, now you bring that up, them having different uniforms. It's like with the snow troopers in Empire. We only see them for that one scene.
That's
or that one segment of the movie. So I would attribute to, they just have different uniforms for different purposes.
And this is the only tropical planet we've seen, so...
That's true.
You know, so maybe that's tropical gear, just like the snow gear. That's a really good point.
Hmm.
So let's kind of run down the line a little bit and touch on some of these new exciting characters because we know we've talked about them. Let's get to meet some of these folks. So let's see. Starting from the top, you have obviously Felicity Jones, who plays What's Her Nuts as
Jyn.
Yeah, Jyn Erso.
Where's Tonic?
What? I don't know what that means. All right.
Like, you're an adult.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So here's the deal. So you have this is the second Star Wars movie in a row to have a female protagonist.
Yay!
Let's talk about Jyn a little bit.
I thought she was cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, I didn't like her as much at first because she seemed really one note, as in, like, I'm bad, and I've done bad things, so now I'm really, really tough on the outside. But I feel like as the movie progressed, and she met up with her father, and then she started getting closer with Tough Guy, with Accent, and, like, as time went on, she showed her true colors more, she showed more of her personality, and I slowly started enjoying her character a lot more.
Kind of the same thing. I think that a lot of the reason why she seemed so one-dimensional at first was she was trying to protect herself.
Yeah.
She didn't want to get close to anyone. She didn't want to be involved in anything. She didn't care about the rebellion or anything. Mm-hmm. But then as she started meeting up with her dad or running into that dude who raised her again, or just as things escalated, she couldn't help but open up. And then you realize that there was a lot more going on with her. Uh-huh. She did actually care. She was actually invested.
I dug her. I thought she had a sufficient amount of sass and moxie.
Yeah.
Doesn't take enough crap, but is enough to be, you know, vulnerable enough for that kind of protagonist that I'm looking for. I think I was looking for maybe a little more, but I can't articulate what more is. Did I want her to murder more people? I'm not sure. Did I want her to fall in love with Cassian? I doubt it, but I don't know. I don't know what this intangible more I was looking for.
I think I agree with you, too, and I think it might be, and this is just a personal opinion, mm-hmm. I felt like, what was her name? From the one before this, from...
Ray.
I felt like
Mary
Ray...
Mary Sue herself.
Oh, she was wonderful. But that's exactly my opinion. I felt like Ray was a little bit more. Jin was maybe not a watered-down version, but kind of felt like the same character again.
You know,
so it's like the same type of female.
Yeah, exactly the same type of strong female protag. So I felt
strong.
Repetitive.
Life has been tough. But now I'm going to show my true colors.
Yeah.
Stuff
like that.
I still don't think she was a bad character, but no. I agree with you. I felt like there was something missing.
Yeah, and it was interesting. My wife was sharing with me. She had seen some stuff on Facebook before we had seen the movie. No spoilers.
Yeah.
But basically, like, overall impressions from some of her friends were they were disappointed. And it's like, what
with
are you
Jin?
Just... No, with the
or
movie.
The
and
film.
And what it was, they were expecting Force Awakens. They were expecting Force Awakens, and they were expecting Rey, and instead got this war movie with this female protagonist that's not this intangible more that we're talking
about.
Mm-hmm.
She just acquired all these skills without any actual training or anything like that. So that's what I didn't like about Rey.
Okay.
Other than that, she's fine.
Okay, all right.
But
fair enough.
Back to, I'm forgetting, Jin. I was about to say June for some reason.
June Moon.
June Moon. Yeah, I was going to say that.
But Jin. Jin. She was okay.
she was
okay. I mean, she wasn't that memorable for me. But then again, I'm spoiled with strong female characters like Ellen Ripley and Sarah Connor.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. So I have an article. It's an editorial I'm going to share with you a little bit. Some expert excerpts of it. It's written by Katie Freitas of The Daily Caller. And the headline is Rogue One, the second failure at a believable female lead.
Okay.
She liked the movie, all things considered, except for Jin Erso for being as deep as a puddle. The bottom line is that the current female leads aren't given the time to become something great because we the people refuse to allow for a movie where women aren't great from the start.
Oh.
Okay, I'd agree with that.
That's interesting.
Unlike Rey in The Force Awakens, Jin doesn't have multiple movies to develop because she extra dead. I inserted that. But we still have the same But she still has the same problems Rey does. Both characters come prepackaged with all the requisite badassery needed to fell their foes. They just need a semi-flirty male counterpart to help them realize their full potential.
Interesting.
The issue is that there's no character progression. Jin and Rey have superficial flaws that are resolved in their respective movies. They don't mature into someone better. There is no Luke Skywalker-style evolution from whiny and incompetent to a Death Star-annihilating Jedi. Part of the reason for this shallowness, I think, again, this is this author writing, is that modern-day feminism doesn't allow for a female character to have weakness to criticize. The script, quote-unquote, saying so can't be the only reason audiences have to believe all those soldiers followed Jin to almost certain death. If anything, they followed Jin because they wanted to go to war in the first place, and she was their excuse to go blow up some Empire scum. Not due to any inspiration she imparted. And I'm going to pause there for a quick second.
Because I disagree with that part.
You know, those speeches were weak sauce. You know, rebellion's a bit on hope.
Well, that wasn't even... was that part, that line even in the movie itself? Because there's a lot of stuff in the trailers that weren't in the movie.
Yeah, that line was said twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're cramming hope down your throat.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the... this is a rebellion. I rebel.
Oh, yeah,
That's the line that wasn't in the movie.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that a little later, but let me see. You know what? You get the idea.
Yeah.
Script shouldn't be neutered to pander to the perennially offended among us. Female leads deserve as much time to become something fantastic as male leads, but we have to be okay with watching them stumble first. In the and this is again very abridged. She talks about Ellen Ripley and Sarah Connor and a lot of these. You know, there's more to this article, but I wanted to keep it.
Those two characters. They were well developed well before the sequels to those the respective franchises. Alien Ripley went from a by the book flight officer to a strong leader.
Absolutely, and Sarah Connor the same way. She starts off as a waitress and you know really just kind of breezing through life, and then suddenly she has destiny thrust upon her. Maybe that's not the correct choice of words.
It's accurate.
That is not what I meant, though.
Well, your mind's in the gutter. There you go.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. So, anything else about Captain Gruffy Pants?
Oh, we're talking about Cassian now?
Yeah. Was there anything else we wanted to talk about with Jin?
No.
I just wanted to keep it moving. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
You know, the dreamy Diego Luna. He's a good-looking dude. One thing I liked about him was his aesthetic. You know, it's like he had, like, you know, the 1970s are in full effect, like that puffy jacket he has.
Yeah.
He looks like he borrowed it from Han Solo because it looks like it's the same Hoth jacket. But yeah, with the, you know, the puffy sleeves and the anyway, I liked him. I would have I agree with what Killing Spree was saying in that it's a lot of telling you how hard his heart is, and really the only example you get is when he straight up murders that dude in the... Homeboy had a broken arm, by the way. He's like, I don't know what... He's like...
Oh, he put him out of his misery. It's fine.
Yeah, fair enough. So, yeah, and the time that he got the occasion to get really crimson and really dark, he shrinks away from it. He doesn't take the shot, even though his rifle was in the sniper configuration.
I feel like he didn't really impact the film as like a character as much as a story-driven kind of guy. Like, he's the one who really was like, this is what we're doing. This is our goal. This is where we're going. It's like, okay, thank you, Cassian, but who are you?
Yeah, he was kind of just the driver.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, he's a living plot device or a plot mover.
He's like the Uber driver that they
he's
needed.
He's the Uber driver of the galaxy.
Well, you know, they were trucking around in a U-Wing fighter for a while.
There you go. You know, the Uber.
Yeah, see, there it is. So let's get to it. Let's talk about my favorite character of the movie, K2SO.
Robot.
I have an affinity for robot characters. You know, it's very well documented my love of the Transformers.
Yeah.
So I'm predisposed to like robot characters.
He was a sassy boy.
I love R2-D2. I've loved him since I was a kid. I liked BB-8 and Force Awakens, and I think K2SO is like the latest in that line of iconic robot characters.
Oh yeah. Well,
on that, how did you feel about the line from the trailer that he had that was cut? It's like, I will not kill you, or I can't remember word for word, but he's basically looks at
that was
Jen.
That was in the movie. Cassian tells me you're a friend, so I won't kill you.
I don't remember that in the movie at all.
Okay.
Yeah, he never said that. The only interaction he had with her in that city was, did you know that droid wasn't me?
That was funny, though.
I love that.
And I'm glad that line was there. That was a good moment.
Yeah, I mean, he was an excellent source of levity and humor funniest guy in the room.
Oh yeah.
It's like why does she get a blaster? And I love how they played that off at the end. It's like, here, take it. Really? What, you wanted one?
Exactly.
And turns out he's a crack shot because he was like, ba bam.
Yeah. You know,
well, he is a robot.
True.
I like that
quick draw action.
Oh,
he had.
Yeah.
That was sick. But
I like how he would always say, like, I have a bad feeling about this. We have a blank percent chance of failing.
Yeah.
And then they would be like, nah, we're okay. He's like, guys, I was literally made for this.
No. I think what it was is the pilot that they rescued was unsure about where they were. He's like, well, now it's 30%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just like that. He was just the perpetual Debbie Downer.
He was so sassy.
But yeah,
I loved it.
Yeah, it's constantly, he's like, guys, guys, guys. I can't not hear that now. Just guys. Really. It's high. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed his character. And again, of all the character deaths, I think that's the one that kind of struck me because his was the first.
Yeah.
And once you realize that they did this stuff on purpose.
Wait, his wasn't the first.
No, I think it was because he was trying to hold
them off. Mads Mikkelsen.
Well,
Dude,
stop.
I'm sorry.
Okay, but of our heroes, where I'm going with that, and I don't want to, you know, take away from your Dreamboat's untimely demise. Dude, Homegirl's got a thing for Mads Mikkelsen. I've been listening to this for the past year.
I'm sorry that you just suffer through this.
Oh, it's great. It's great. But basically, he's the first hero of the group. And he's the one where it's like, oh, nobody's safe.
Yeah, because so far all the droids seem to survive somehow.
Yep. And yeah, when you see the
light
go out.
Interesting.
Yeah, because like C-3PO is somehow still kicking. R2-D2 is just going.
Oh, yeah. Now,
I didn't even think about
that. And no way they're going to kill the soccer ball. He's too cute.
Yeah. I love him.
Are you guys familiar with Firefly, Serenity, that kind of thing?
Yes.
Okay, so I got a yes. Ah, here we go. It's a character that's played by Alan Tudyk, the voice of K2SO.
Yes.
And when his character...
Are we talking about the movie?
The movie. So here's the deal. It's the same thing, though.
It is. You're totally right.
It's the same thing, and it has the same narrative purpose.
Yeah.
It's this character that says nobody is safe.
Yeah. Oh, my God, you're totally right. I remember that. It just hurt me physically a little bit. But I'm okay.
All right. We're here for you. I don't know if this is a safe space or not. But
No safe spaces
with
here.
Killing spree here?
This is,
no.
This is not a liberal arts college.
Well, you know where...
Well, I guess technically Green River might be, but... Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
That broke my brain. So, how about a blind guy? Talk about Blind Guy.
I love Blind
Guy. Let's get to Blind Guy. He's probably
my... The force was the beat.
Next to K2SO, he had one of the best comedic lines, like, are you serious? You're kidding me? I'm blind.
Yeah, that was good.
I loved his character. And again, like, you know, he has like this Zen mysticism, but he's also got some cynical bite to him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just
he's
a little
some
bit.
Shit, that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it was...
Figuratively.
Well, and
stop!
Sorry.
And one of the things that legitimately surprised me was, turns out his walking stick is a fucking crossbow! Laser crossbow that he uses to take out a TIE fighter!
Well,
and he's blind! It's so cool.
That was one of my favorite moments of the movie, where not only does he, you know, aim, but then, like, I don't know if you guys caught this or not, but before he takes the shot, he turns his head and, like, then shoots. He's like, you know, nobody can see what I'm doing, but it's like this.
I remember that.
But yeah, I really enjoyed him. And some of his blind guy acting and mannerisms, it was like I saw like the way he would occasionally swish his head around. We had a classmate of ours that was blind.
Yeah.
And I haven't spent a lot of time around blind people. So it was kind of a new experience with this classmate of ours, but I picked up on some of those mannerisms.
You're
that the actor was doing in his performance of this character.
It really sold him as an actual blind person.
I think
he had a lot of the same movements that as somebody who couldn't see, because they're following a sound with their head. That's why they move.
Exactly. Yeah.
I didn't even notice that, because my line of work, I work with like a lot of blind and deaf people.
So for you, it's normal to see.
Exactly. It's just like, I didn't even notice that. That's really interesting.
So it was so good that it just read as authentic.
Cool.
So it wasn't distracting one way or the other. Which is, that means it did what it was supposed to. It was great.
But I was going to say, the blind dude, what I liked about him was, going into Rogue One, I was kind of worried that they would have a ham-fisted Jedi because, you know, Star Wars have to have the Force and the Jedi. But he was just enough that it did. Him being force sensitive, whatever, it didn't feel out of place or unnecessary. It was just right.
Yes.
I completely agree.
It
invokes the spirit of the Force without saying, I'm a secret Jedi.
Yeah.
You know? Look at my lightsaber.
Exactly. Like, if that stick was a lightsaber instead of a gun.
I would have been done.
Yeah, I agree with you. 100% agree with you. Let's talk about his maybe boyfriend, machine gun guy who's got a big vacuum cleaner on his back. Dude, I love that gun. I'm a sucker for science fiction tech.
Oh, same.
So when I see like a belt-fed laser machine gun, I'm like, cool. I like it.
I'm sold.
You mow down the anything, just like that rapid fire sound, because it's the Star Wars blaster sound that we're all familiar with.
Yeah.
Just turned to rapid fire. I loved it.
I find it was cool enough, but as far as big gunner characters go.
Uh-huh.
Jesse the Body Ventura did better in Predator.
I don't.
You're bleeding, man. I ain't got time to bleed.
Yeah. See, and oh man, that's a really good relate. But I think it kind of conjures some of that spirit of that type of character. But, I didn't even think of him as like the heavy gunner type.
The tank. But, yeah. Very much.
Yeah.
But now that I think about it, it's like him and blind guys. Like you remove one of them, you can't have the other.
No.
Yeah, they're two sides of the same coin.
But how are they connected?
Yeah,
like,
that's...
what made them come together? Because they're very different people.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, what is that story behind, and why is the guy with, like, the big gun so protective of him?
To me, it reminds me of the relationship of Han and Chewie. Like, they're buddies.
Yeah.
And you don't need to be explained why they're buddies.
Yeah, but
they just
like
are.
To know.
You'd like to know, but at the same time, not knowing why they're buddies, it doesn't hurt anything.
See, it gives me a different feeling, though. Because with Han and Chewie, I don't feel the need to know why they met up, why they came together, why they're best friends. Maybe it's because Chewie is not exactly humanoid.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, possibly because, like, maybe I don't have that much interest in them because of that. But with these two, I need to know why they're together and why they're doing this thing.
Well, I'm sure Disney has an answer for you.
No problem.
Fuck you, buy the book.
There it is.
I'm ready.
Yeah, because I'm sure coming soon to a novel or a comic book.
I think there's already a novel. Well, hold on. You can keep going. I'm going to look
it
up.
Google that.
Well, yeah, Google that-ish. But yeah, no, I agree with you in that I want to know more. But here's the thing. I think that it's satisfying in a bizarre way, follow me here, that we don't get all that stuff. I kind of like having that unsatisfied yearning, because look at
it means it's a good story that they're good characters.
Well, and the examples I have is this movie's basically the Dirty Dozen. This is basically the Magnificent Seven.
Mm.
You know, those like Yojimbo or Seven Samurai or anyway, the thing that's in common with all those is those characters show up, they have their time, and then they all get wiped out. So, you have an update for us?
Yes, I've done some extensive research.
Okay.
Not only is there a novelization of Rogue One available now, there's also a lead-into book.
Okay.
Catalyst, a Rogue One novel.
Of course.
Catalyst : a Rogue One novel - a Star Wars story.
So, yes. Fuck you. Buy the book.
I guess we're going to the bookstore.
I'm down. I'm cool with reading that. So, I want to know.
But yeah, I mean, so like I said, I mean, I was oddly okay. I mean, I get you. I do want to spend more time with these characters, but at the same time, I'm not bent about it because
There's only so much you can do in 2 hours.
But I like that they made us care about these characters before clearing them off the board.
That's true.
I mean, it's kind of like a George R. R. Martin move.
Yeah.
Almost. You know, I mean, because, I mean, that's a testament to how endearing these characters are. That
that's
we
true.
Want so much more of them, and we're denied it. I kind of like that.
So from a movie standpoint, absolutely. To give you the characters and then take them away, it somehow makes them more endearing.
But if you desperately need that backstory, mm-hmm. Disney provides.
Exactly. You know what else Disney provides? White capes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Cape Man.
One's Cape Man?
I'm trying to step on
who
your funny
that?
Names. I'm trying to anticipate what Mickey's funny names for these characters are.
Wait, who's Cape Man?
That's Director Krennic, the bad guy. Who is so badass that not only does he wear white, but he wears a cape.
A cape. You know what's like a big deal when they show up with a cape.
But he's the only character outside of Darth Vader in this movie that gets to wear a cape. It's great.
That's true.
I like this guy because he's like he's middle management trying to work his way to the top. He's like, so you'll tell the Emperor about this, right? Right? Right?
Yeah.
Nudge. You know, I get to still be in charge,
right?
I can
see him like sitting at his desk like, I hope I get that promotion.
Yes. as he just went out and bought this sick new outfit for his new, you know, with the
he's
cape.
He's like ironing his cape. Like, I hope I get that promotion, man.
Well, since we're talking about Krennic here,
yeah,
not going back to stuff that was in the trailer but not in the movie.
Sure.
Oh.
Something I kind of wish was in the movie. He's on the battlefield. He's
what?
On ground level in the trailer.
Oh, he should have been then.
There is an iconic shot in the trailer.
His cape is dragging in the water.
He's dragging across the water. He's walking across the beach. There's dead stormtroopers everywhere. And his cape is skimming across the water as he's stomping across the beach.
Yeah, that should have been in the movie.
Yo, that would have been so awesome.
Because, like, that moves
I'm
him
really
up from,
disappointed
like,
now.
Instead of just being middle management guy, like, he's really invested if he was down on the beach.
He would have been so badass if he did that.
And this is a very, very minor nitpick, but something I kind of couldn't help but notice when watching the movie. In the opening scene when he arrives to the farm.
Yeah.
Why did he park his ship so far away?
Yeah, they had to huff it.
Dramatic entrance.
I mean, I know it's for
a really far dramatic,
dude.
Entrance.
Well, I mean, cape aesthetic, man. That is not
fully,
gonna. That 100%. Is not gonna flap itself.
Well,
man.
I mean, I know for story. I know for story purposes, it's supposed to give the characters enough time to pack their shit and leave. But from a practicality standpoint, it's like, why would you do that?
Maybe he had a big lunch and he just had a walk it off spree.
You underestimate how important a good cape flapping is.
It's true.
It really
people
just rattles
you don't need a you don't need a mile. To get a good cape entrance.
Hey, with a cape that big, yes, you do.
Vader disagrees. He can walk with it a small hallway.
He has the force.
He has the force. Okay.
Whatever.
He can. Yeah. He can do a cape flip with the force. Krennic can't do that.
True. So, so I thought that Krennic was used pretty effectively for what he was. I liked his character. I liked his character arc. To where he's just like, he gets it at the end by the thing that he was, it's like, I'm in charge of the Death Star, now the Death Star is killing me, god damn it.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked that. But what I didn't like was how we were sold that Forrest Whitaker was going to be in this movie, but apparently wasn't.
I am glad you brought him up. Another thing.
Save the rebellion.
No, another part. Well,
asthma. I call them.
Okay. Well, two things. Well, now that's two things that bother me about.
So good.
I call him cool asthma guy.
You want some of this shit?
So two things about Forrest Whitaker that bothered me. This goes back again to stuff that was in the trailer, but not in the movie. The "What will you become?" speech.
Yep.
Not in the movie.
Not in the movie.
It's like, I want to know what that was about.
Yep.
Does Jen become, or like, was he worried that she would turn to the Empire or something?
Well, yeah, and then that's when that scene changes to where, like, the lights in the hallway on and she's wearing the Imperial outfit.
It was a total reshoot, because in that trailer, he was bald.
Yeah. Well, he's bald for, like, in like, the flashback where, like, she's a kid.
Oh, yeah.
For that
and,
one little instance. But
and
I
that's
mean,
all it was. You're
but
right.
But that scene, though, well, at least I'm assuming, was supposed to be when they meet up again.
Yep.
And he's got a messed up hair, but
right, yeah, he's all shaggy.
The other thing that the last thing that I felt was a total waste was his death.
Yeah, it was
it was like, I'm going to no more running for me, and then he just watches.
Well, you think about it, right? I mean,
it would have been a perfect opportunity for a hop on the grenade moment, like saving him or killing
save the rebellion,
sacrificing himself.
My hip,
and just something, even like say I don't know, like they're. they're trying to get him, but since he's got a bum leg, like he's not as fast or something. And then he just kind of pushes him away. He's like, "Go! I am slowing you down." That he could have had that moment. That would have been so much better than him just it's like, "No more running for me. No more running. Now watch me die."
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you ran.
Well, and here's the thing.
Metaphorically
like,
speaking.
You know, and they couldn't take him with him because he's got mismatched shoes.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a big deal.
So he has robot feet.
Yeah.
But he has two different robot feet.
Who made that decision?
He did.
Dude,
he Saw Gerrera, why are you like this?
Oh my God, you actually know a character's name.
She's looking at it.
I have a computer screen.
Oh, check you out.
I wrote it down.
Pages of the IMDb Tribune.
I think you can explain that in that they're a fighting force that is scraping by.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I just think overall he was just a wasted character. Just totally.
Oh, I mean,
totally wasted.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I feel like he could have done a lot more to a point where, like, I kind of forgot that he was a part of the movie until I saw his picture. And I was like, "Oh, I really like that guy." Until he died, and then he didn't really
like
do anything.
He was supposed to be something that he just didn't.
Yeah, and
I mean, he did what he was supposed to do.
Yeah,
he was a
plot
part. Like, he saved Jin.
Yep.
And then he delivered a message, and then he died.
Well, at least what the rebels wanted him to do was to help out with the rebellion more than just, you know, pass along some information that nobody believed Jin about.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Now, the thing that was, could have been interesting, you know, talking about the movie we wanted instead of the movie we got, but something that could have been interesting is like, you know, so Saw Gerrera is kind of like an extremist. You know, he's kind of like
he's the Taliban.
He's like the
extremist to where the
like
rebel.
That way is the only way.
Yeah, and the mainstream rebellion is like, "Nope, you're too much for us."
Yeah.
And really, I almost wanted to see them push that just a little further. And like, you know, he's blowing up marketplaces and stuff. I'm almost uncomfortable saying this, but I almost wanted to see like some more civilians getting caught in the crossfire.
No, I agree with you.
Like blowing up a marketplace or something.
They played him up like he was this big terrifying force that was just going too far, and he felt his entire force felt kind of lackluster.
Yeah, and they don't give it to him. It's like, yeah, again, like, you know, I want to see him like putting a suicide vest on somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and something to really illustrate.
Like taking that extra step where you say, "Oh, that's too far."
Yeah, because I feel like what he's supposed to be is, because there's always that two sides to every war. Even the good guys do some bad things. And it was like maybe he was supposed to illustrate that, but he didn't do a very good job of it.
I wonder if you can attest that to the reshoots. Like, was there studio interference here?
See, and you know what? Since we're on that topic, and Mickey will try to loop back to Mads Mikkelsen, try to remind us if there's stuff you want to say about it. But let's talk about that. Because we've been dancing around this throughout our entire chat here. I'm hearing rumors that up to like 40% of this movie was reshot. I don't agree with that, because I remember reading back in like August, they're like, "Oh my God, reshoots. And I remember, like, I think maybe it was Gareth Edwards himself, the director, came out and said, "Well, dude, if we were, we're doing reshoots. But if we were reshooting this much of the movie, we would not be able to make our December release date." So, you know, we're not remaking the entire movie.
Right.
So I took him at his word on that. But then there are so many things in that in those first couple trailers that are just not in the movie.
When Jen is walking across that walkway.
Yep.
The shot with the TIE fighter coming up.
Where was that?
I should have seen
the
trailer.
Not in the movie.
Yeah.
Right? I'm sitting over here like, damn. Maybe I need the trailer for the movie.
Yeah, you know, we almost should have watched that first trailer before we started recording. But basically, that first teaser trailer is for a different movie.
Yeah, I'm getting that sense.
Because there's more of Krennic saying like, "Oh, we have unlimited power," you know, and
then there's the Vader looking over the Death Star plans or display of them.
Yes.
Like it was all graphics were all red.
Yep.
Yep.
Like that's not in the movie.
That's not in the movie. Let's see. So yeah. So it and Jin on the beach. There is a trailer.
Yes, she's running with the plans.
She has the hard drive buckled to her belt, and she's running with rebel troops on the beach.
That would have been cool.
Not in the movie.
Yeah, that trailer, like it.
Bummer.
Like that shot ends the trailer with the AT-AT shooting at the screen.
Yep. again, like Spree mentioned it earlier, like the whole Saw Gerrera speech, you know, if you continue down this path, what will you become? None of that is in the movie.
Yeah, because that sounds like pretty important.
Yeah, and you know, not for nothing, just now that we're thinking about the trailer, I still don't know what those things were in Jin's backpack when she had the... Because I remember in a completely different podcast several months ago talking about the Rogue One trailer when it came out. You know, a lot of us, like myself and Dave and Corey from The Buzz, we were trying to figure out what's going on with her costume, and this movie didn't answer that. She just has like these stick things in her backpack for no apparent reason. They come to nothing.
Secret nunchucks.
I thought it was just a disguise, wasn't that? Like they captured some.
Yeah.
Imperialists or people from the Empire, and that's how they got in.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing because it looks like they should be like secret nunchucks, or maybe like it's important for like the data grabber thing. Maybe they were like the things that you use to like grab the plans or something. But no, they were just kind of there to be not katana swords, I guess.
Huh.
So let's see. Anything about the pilot guy other than he had a really awesome name? Bodie Rook.
The dude that got,
with the mustache?
With the goggles.
Rook. The dude that got violated.
Goggles.
Are you talking about the dude that got violated by the horrible hentai tentacle rape monster?
Yes, the defector. The pilot that defected. The guy that, you know, he,
I do have
Riz Ahmed?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember him from Nightcrawler.
I do have an issue, but it has more to do with the writing than the character itself.
Sure.
Leading up to the horrible hentai tentacle rape monster, Forrest Whitaker...
Stop!
Yeah, please.
Okay, fine, okay. Whatever.
All right.
But Forrest Whitaker says, like, he'll leave you insane, basically.
Yeah.
After they escape, he's back to normal.
Yeah, you're right.
See,
he had to like jar his senses, I think. But I feel like he should have been.
No, it was really quick. It was quick.
See, I didn't read it that way. You maybe it's my memory playing tricks on me, but I think it was like, you know, well, you're the pilot. I'm the pilot. And then he's like, you know, I'm the pilot. I'm the pilot. I'm the pilot. And then it kind of like shakes back loose. But my read on his character is he was never quite the same. Like,
no.
Even towards, like, the end of the movie, like, you know, actually, no, like, when they decide to leave, you know, and it's like, well, we need a call sign. And I don't think it was bad acting. I think it was he's playing up his diminished mental state.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't say bad acting. I said bad writing.
No, I understand. But, I mean, just, like, some of his line delivery could be interpreted that way because it's kind of stilted and kind of almost a sing-songy
and
he's like, I don't know.
Would you have liked it better if he had, like, moments, like, almost relapses in his memory throughout the film where, like, he suddenly went, like, he didn't know what he was doing, he didn't know where he was because of all that stuff that went on? Because I'm not sure what that monster did to him, but I'm sure that they just, like, got his memories out and, like, fucked up his brain a bunch.
Yeah.
Well, but, it's just the impression that Forrest Whitaker gave me that this monster would give what,
like,
he wanted,
he
but it would, the impression I got that it would have, the creature would have made him more or less brain dead.
Yeah.
You will tell me the truth, but you'll be robbed of your sanity.
Yeah, so then would you have rather him be a loose cannon throughout the film? Would that make you a bit happier with his character development?
I, from a writing standpoint, yeah, that might have made it a little bit better. I don't know.
Okay.
See, what I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, it's an opinion.
I don't fully agree with it either, but...
But, I mean, it's an opinion, obviously, and you know, we're making this up as we go, but I think it's his stability that kind of carries things later on in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you've got other kind of, you know, everyone's having their stories. This, you know, we talk about Cassian being the driver, but this guy, I mean, was literally the driver.
Yeah.
And, and again... He's a defector, so he says no to the Empire. So he's paying a higher price than I think some of these other characters, arguably.
I'd say that you definitely have a point there.
Possibly,
yeah.
But he it's kind of funny though with his death. Everybody kind of gets death by imminent explosion. I thought that was kind of
yeah
interesting. I mean, because, I mean, does even when Blind Stick Guy, when he finally gets it, doesn't he get it by, like, grenade or something?
I think he got shot.
Okay. I thought he blew up.
No, yeah, I think you're right. I think he was got, like, caught in a blast, and then his buddy went out and basically got mowed down, but was mowing down other people in the process.
But still got it by grenade, though, because he smokes a couple death troopers. One of them has a grenade.
Yeah.
He goes to throw it. The grenade falls out of his hand, and apparently it's still close enough. See, I mean, that I read that distance kind of funny. But then again, he was all shot up, too. So
yeah, so, I mean, he wouldn't need the direct blast.
It'd just be like the last straw kind of thing, I feel like.
But everybody gets like that, you know, like, I mean, everybody.
Interesting.
It's kind of fascinating. I mean, like, you know, Cassian and Jin get the deep impact ending on the beach there.
Yeah, do you think that entire, like, the way that they killed every character was kind of foreshadowing that last scene?
I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's fascinating.
It's all big explosions, basically. Hmm. So,
yeah.
Could have been.
Fascinating. I hadn't thought about it that way, but it definitely has merit. Do you want to talk about Mads Mikkelsen before we...
Of course I do, Mike. I don't know why that's even a question. So first and foremost, I didn't realize that he was going to be in this movie, and I wasn't physically prepared for him to be in this movie.
Oh, my God.
Because I saw him, and I saw, like, his profile, and I was like, oh, cool, so there's going to be, like, a handsome dude in this movie. I usually like this type. And then it was Mads Mikkelsen, and I was like... Oh, my God. And I held my friend's hand tighter. I was like, guys, I didn't expect this. And it was just really, really weird. But his character was interesting, to say the least. I thought him as a father was kind of weird because with Jin and everything, I know that the white cape guy was there and he's like, I'm going to steal all your family, man.
All your family are belong to us.
That was the line. I was there. It happened.
Are you sure it wasn't in the trailer? But I just thought it was kind of weird that he was like, go to this little hole in the ground and I'll see you later, buddy. And then years and years and years later, Jin finally finds him. She finds his whole message and we find out that he's actually a good guy, ? But he's like still part of the Empire and just like, weird. And then all those guys were taking credit for the message getting out, I think, when Cape Guy was there and it was raining and stuff.
Yep.
And then he was like, no, it was me. I just couldn't understand what his motive was and, like, what his feelings were and what he was doing in that film. And then he just died. And then Cassian was like, come on, Jin, you gotta go. And she's just like, I haven't seen my dad in years, and now he's dead. And he's like, screw it. We're out of here.
Yeah. Well,
blowing this popsicle stand.
To be fair, though, they had just called in an airstrike. In fact, it's because of that frickin' rebel airstrike that... That
they had to skedaddle.
Yeah, that all of that happened the way that it did. But so you were unclear about what his motives were, and everything.
I thought it was clear from the beginning that he didn't want to do this.
Right.
Then why did he do it?
Because I feel that he acknowledged. I think he even says this in maybe the hologram message to.
Well, that's why he went off to the farm, because he didn't want to. Anything to do with the Empire or the Death Star anymore.
Right, but after they take him, I think he resigns himself to the Empire has enough to where they're going to do this anyway. So what I am going to do is I'm going to help them build the super weapon, but I'm going to build this fuse into it, thus plugging a 40-year-old plot hole.
Was that really a plot hole? I thought it was more of a physics inconsistency.
Potato, potato, you know, but it's, but yeah, I mean, I dug that. It's like, it explains why that this 2-meter thermal exhaust port with a direct hit. He's like, you still need the plans to figure out where it is, but just know this thing is in there. But I think he put that in there as basically his revenge. He's like, I'm going to put this,
I can see that.
This catastrophic vulnerability, because if I don't,
Then will be none.
Yeah, and then everybody is screwed. At least this way,
so this
you
is
have
like
a chance.
His small victory.
Yeah,
yeah.
If he's head of the entire project, then he can totally bullshit a reason why that exhaust vent needs to be there.
And one sec. And it explains why it took so goddamn long to build this thing. Homeboy's shuffling his feet wherever he can. So, so how about you, Spree? What do you think about Galen Oppenheimer?
Yeah, didn't really do anything for me.
I mean, or at least, because I think you and I have talked off the air at certain points about. You had brought up, well, wait a minute, I thought it was like the bug creatures in Attack of the Clones that built
actually, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Like, why did they need him when the those bug creatures from Attack of the Clones were the guys that designed the Death Star?
I have a fan theory.
Tell me.
Well, hold on.
Oh.
Here's the thing about fan theories. They're bullshit.
Oh, it's rude.
That's not a theory.
Now sell me your bullshit.
Okay. So in Attack of the Clones, you see the weird crickety bug people with the schematics of the Death Star. They call it the ultimate weapon. Oh, we need to get the plans for the ultimate weapon out of here. Whatever. But I think what they could do, the bug people, is they could design the Death Star as a space station and as a vehicle and as a war machine. But I think it took Galen Erso's expertise with the crystals to make the super laser work.
Interesting.
I think it would have just been a big space station with a laser instead of a super laser. I think that's why they needed Galen Erso, as opposed to, because I mean, they're, like it or not, there's a 20-year gap between the end of episode 3 and when, I mean, there's no explanation for why this project takes 20 years. Perhaps they, you know, couldn't get the weapon to do what they wanted to do.
Well, until something official comes along. It's convenient explanation.
It absolutely is, but I felt proud of myself because I came up with that off the top of my head a day or two ago. I got it. Because usually with me, I don't necessarily, I agree, fan theories are bullshit, but I, you know. It's very often I just take things at face value.
But to somewhat flip-flop. However, I am kind of glad it's another thing from the prequels that is is not a part of these new movies.
Right.
So I'll take it, even if it doesn't make sense.
Sure.
Wait, when are we going to talk about Darth Vader as a character?
Well, do we really need to talk about him as a character?
He was just so cool. My notes on him are just whoa in all caps.
All right. Let's.
Okay. Yeah. So let's do Vader.
He's so cool.
Which will go, you know, character into Vader with your stuff about Vader, and then we'll tie off the characters and see about wrapping this ish up.
Sorry.
Because I know Killing Spree is still hungry. So let's get into it. Fucking Vader Unleashed.
Awesome. So I haven't seen the film where he gets burnt to a crisp like he's in a bad toaster.
You don't need to
count yourself fortunate.
Oh, okay.
But we're cynical, jaded fanboys. Also,
fair.
Watch it once to say that you did, but
I'll pop in the tapes later.
Yeah,
but I thought it was. I didn't know what was going to happen when they went up to that tube and he was like in like a steam bath, like a sauna thing.
Yeah,
and I was
chilling.
Like, treat yourself, girl. But then he came out and he went into his suit and I was like, oh, it's the guy. And I kind of, it's him. He's here. And I was so excited.
He's such an iconic character. You couldn't remember his name at the time?
No, but I just got really, really excited. I also really liked his his costume design a bit more, because I was watching A New Hope 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And I saw that, I was looking at his helmet, and his helmet looks like he has an overbite, and that's kind of weird. This helmet looks a lot more like he's intimidating and in power. I'm like, they did a good job redesigning that.
Yeah.
His cape was cool, and then his lightsaber thing in the hallway, and then he was just like, he's here.
So that took up the extent of your notes. I can just imagine you writing in all caps with your fist wrapped around your writing. He's here, just over and over. I see him. He's here.
Well, since we're talking about Vader's character, am I the only one that felt his pun line was out of character?
Wait, what pun?
Don't choke on your ambitions while he's choking the dude.
Okay, I'm right there with you.
I'm
here for puns, though.
I groaned.
Oh, really?
I groaned.
Hey, I love puns, but I felt that line was unnecessary.
Well, and the thing of it is, and it's funny, like, Vader, though, and I've had this pointed out to me, like, in other podcasts that I've listened to, is, you know, Vader is generally kind of like a, not necessarily full-on puns, but, you know, he's... You know, it's like, you know, with the glibness of his dialogue, he's like, you know, you have failed me for the last time. And, you know, he'll find something like, you know, like, I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Yeah.
And, you know, because...
But that's not cringeworthy puns, though.
It's not puns,
I don't disagree. I'm trying to weakly defend the best that I can. But, yeah, you're absolutely
correct.
It's
still, like, something dramatic and still something that, like, sets him apart from everyone else. But he's like, he's just a little burnt piece of toast. Give him some room.
Dude, honestly, a better line would have been while he's choking him, just something along the lines of, learn your place.
Oh.
Sure, yeah. And
that would have been cool.
Yeah, and what really kind of made it groan-worthy is like, they make him turn around and he's like in the force choke mode. I didn't need any of that.
Well,
I mean, I don't
know. He kind of did for people who might not have seen episode four.
Fair enough. Okay,
Well, honestly, anyone who sees this movie without seeing any of the others is kind of going to be left out. Like, they don't know what's going on. They don't know what the Force is. So,
yeah. See, and that was
this is definitely a fan movie.
Not that
that's a bad thing.
No, it's a fan film on a studio budget. So Vader, you know, hallway.
Going to the hallway.
Yep.
Okay.
Black smoke.
Like I hinted at earlier, this is something that I liked. However. It's not for the reason that everybody else loves it. Everybody else loves it because of Vader.
Okay.
What sold that scene for me was the rebels.
Yes.
The look of fear on their faces. The panic.
Yes.
The frantic panic to get out, to get the plans away from Vader. Because all the stuff Vader did, we've seen it before in video games and, like you've mentioned, in a comic book.
Sure.
It's not... That stuff's not new. But, like I said, it was the rebels... Their response to Vader is what sold that scene.
Yeah. The sheer terror and the hopelessness. I mean, like that dude, you feel for that last dude that pushes the plans through. He's like, open the door. No, that's not going to happen. Here's the plans. Run right through.
Yep.
I felt bad for that guy because he ate it so hard. But you know, while I agree with you, Spree, that we've seen Vader in action in other media, I have never seen him on the silver screen in canon chopping people in half.
That was pretty cool.
Force choking folks, smashing them, throwing them against ceilings.
Well, what about episode 3 when he went on that murder rampage?
The one that happened off screen?
No. Not the kids.
Oh.
The one on the lava planet. Like, we see him kill everybody.
Okay. All right. All right.
Or you're just thinking, like, in actual Vader.
Actual Vader. Yeah. You know, Vader the way that we want him.
He should be.
The way we've been told that he is for 40 years. You know, it's like, oh, you know, Darth Vader's really scary. And your observation.
And not an emo little bitch.
Right. Exactly. I mean, dude. Anakin Skywalker is emo AF, man. That's, you know, he's like, oh, I'm sad. I hate sand.
and now he's
playing some My Chemical Romance in that helmet of his.
And now he's like,
I'm not okay.
Boy.
And now I'm going to cry.
Right?
Now I'm going to cry after my murder spree.
Yeah, but yeah, you're absolutely right about, you know, him killing people. But yeah, I mean, just the sheer delight, the slow reveal of the lightsaber. That's probably like the slowest lightsaber ignition ever. But I savored every moment of it. It's just this turgid, throbbing nerd boner. It was just like,
gross.
And just for clarity's sake, because I've had people not quite understand my views on this movie. I'm not saying Vader's himself was bad in that scene. It's just like it was cool, but it was the rebels that made it that much better.
Yeah, and I agree with you.
Yeah, you're precisely correct. I think that's you're absolutely right. And but I mean, I could watch that gif of that dude getting chopped in half over and over again, where it's like, you know, he does like this arm backswing thing. He's already thrown this dude against the ceiling, like snapping his neck, and on his way down, chops the dude in half.
So I mean, cool.
And he's not a dude. Now, here's perhaps a polarizing opinion. As badass as Vader was, and it gave me all the nerd feels like I described to an uncomfortable degree a moment ago.
Yeah.
Darth Vader, though, kind of an unnecessary character in this movie.
Yeah.
He's not really essential to the plot. I mean, it's that Marvel Comics fan service, I think. I think when we were talking about, like, the reshoots and stuff, I think that's maybe where some of this Darth Vader stuff came in. Because, like for example, Vader's castle was going to be in The Empire Strikes Back. I mean, there's concept art of it. There's script excerpts of it that describe it. So, I mean, that Vader's castle was going to be a thing. And the filmmakers saw this as an opportunity to bring that to life. It really doesn't do much to advance the plot, but it's there because it's cool. And that's, again, that's why I love this movie, because it's just cool. And yeah, it does things just because they're cool.
Well, kind of to paraphrase a Red Letter Media video about this, that the cool stuff, like the action, the humor, it's frosting. It's frosting on the cake that the story is. You know? And to me, the story was, I don't want to say hollow, but it felt more frosting than cake.
I happen to like frosting.
Well, the thing is, though, that Red Letter Media points out, I was like, sure, it's great, but when you eat so much of it, eventually you get sick.
And that's the concern.
See, yeah, and that's, I think, where I kind of stumbled upon my Marvel analogy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
I'm already burnt out on Marvel.
Yeah, and these movies are going to come out once a year.
Oh, I'm already tired of it.
Right? See, and... But
like,
then
I already need a nap.
But then again, if they keep cranking out movies like this, you know, I don't know. I love this movie. I was expecting a side movie, again, like a video game brought to life, and I got something that stands more or less with the originals. I will watch Rogue One before I watch Phantom Menace again.
Well, that's not saying much, but since you brought it up, one of the few comments I saw before seeing Rogue One, or maybe it was a headline, but it was declaring that this movie was the best Star Wars movie since The Empire Strikes Back. Do you agree with that?
No.
No.
I don't agree with that at all.
Okay.
I was very excited leaving the theater. I loved the movie, but I'm like, I mean, and I've heard Kevin Smith say, oh, it's Empire good. It's good, but I don't know. They're two different movies of a different time. I don't think you can put The Empire Strikes Back in theaters now and it have the resonance that it did then.
No.
You know, it just doesn't move fast enough. I mean, my wife cannot watch The Empire Strikes Back. She falls asleep during it.
It's a completely different style of movie shooting. It's much slower. It's much more story-driven.
Yeah.
There's less explosions and action.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's why I was kind of expecting from this movie was, you know, boots on the ground, grounded characters without all the Force stuff. And I think I got that to an extent.
Yeah, it was definitely more of a war movie than the episodic ones.
Any particular Easter eggs that you guys happened to find in your viewing that you were pretty excited about? There was a bunch. Like, I kept talking, you know, we were talking about member berries earlier, and I was talking about nostalgia buttons. I mean, it's like, you know, we talked a lot about the CGI Tarkin and Leia, but one thing we haven't talked about was the inclusion of Red Leader and Gold Leader.
I thought that sounded familiar.
Now that you mention it, there's one cameo I wish we could have had, but we didn't. Porkins. We didn't get Porkins.
But no, like, basically these two fighter pilots, Red Leader and Gold Leader, they basically were characters from A New Hope, and they inserted them into the movie not via CGI trickery, but through unused footage and alternate takes from the 1977
Smart.
Original. Yeah, I mean, and it looks cool, and it looks seamless. The way that they put it in, and the aesthetic on the other pilots, they fit right in.
But, when you talk about those Easter eggs, those are the kind of nostalgia things that I don't mind. That I think it's great for the fans, but it's not punching you in the nose about it. Were we going to talk about the story inconsistency?
Oh, yeah. I may have skipped that. I'm sorry.
Well, it's a really big one. Well, big one to me. But when the Death Star plans are being taken over to Leia's ship, which is for some stupid reason at the battle... It's the plans are handed to Leia's ship.
Yeah.
And not transmitted to, like, the dialogue indicated in episode 4.
Hmm. Yeah, because Darth Vader shows up. He's like, several transmissions were intercepted to this ship. I want to know what happened to the plans they sent you.
And this is where the plot hole gets bigger.
Okay.
Leia's ship's there.
Here we go.
She goes into, they call it warp drive or...
Hyperdrive.
Hyperdrive.
Star Trek. Star Trek is warp drive.
Same difference.
Whoa.
That's why I said it. That is exactly why I said it.
Would you please shut the hell?
See, I told you you were going to find a use for that. But
there's my Stan Lee cameo.
So she's gone into light speed and whatnot.
Yeah.
How does Vader track her? Because in episode 4, we see the Millennium Falcon lose Star Destroyers by going into light speed.
See, if you
have no transmissions to track, how in the hell do you track Leia's ship?
It's a great question.
Since Vader was at the battle as well.
See, what I was thinking, and I'm pretty sure I'm mistaken, and just thinking kind of weird about it. To me, I feel like the next scene that we don't see is Vader dramatically turning around, cape flapping in the vacuum of space, follow that ship.
But
how do you know where? And then we're at A New Hope. I think this. But, goes right to the door, and if you take out the end credits and the beginning crawl, they match right up.
Well, hold on. How does Vader know where Leia's ship's going to go out of hyperspace?
He guessed.
Oh, yeah.
Because Han Solo states that you have to put in coordinates. Otherwise, you're going to go through a star.
Yeah, unless you're on Jakku in the Millennium Falcon, or you know, they even do this same shit in when they leave the what is it, Jeddah, or oh yeah, like the tsunami dirt wave is about to get them, and even K2SO is like, oh yeah, dude, we need to put in calculations because we might die, and Captain Gruffy Pants is just like, screw it, I'll put in these coordinates, and off they go, and how they don't sail through a star, I don't know. Because it's a series of movies where space magic exists, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely say that the space magic's part of it.
I mean, it's not a credible explanation. I don't have one.
The science is so soft you could spread it on a croissant.
Well, that's why Star Wars is not science fiction. It's science fantasy. That's the only one that really, really stuck out with me. I mean, the whole tarantula face and pig face being on that planet and not Tatooine, that was more of a nitpick.
Yeah, and that was them trying to push a cameo and maybe pushed it a little too far.
Not nearly as far as C-3PO and Phantom Menace, not to go back on that.
Well, Phantom Menace, my ass. How about in Rogue One? You see C-3PO and R2-D2 in the hangar for no reason.
Yeah, they didn't really need to be there.
Yeah, I mean, and that is where you start getting into member berries, I think. It's like, hey, look, here's these characters, just cause.
I agree with you on that one. It's just, my point was with the member barrier for Phantom Menace and C-3PO, story-wise, made no goddamn sense. Why does Anakin's slave mom need a... What's she going to do with a protocol droid? She's a slave.
I'm sorry. Just
Anakin was just trying to build something nice for his mom. Leave him alone.
Yeah, you know...
a mass-produced droid.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have my new My Chemical Romance cover band is gonna be Slave Mom Droid, Anakin Slave Mom Droid.
Love it.
But no, the chase stuff. That was it. That was all I had.
Yeah, and you're not wrong. And that's an inconsistency that could probably be carried across the entire saga, more or less. So maybe after the blockade runner goes to hyperspace, maybe they start trying to radio back to Rebel Command, and those are the transmissions that are intercepted.
Well,
because I mean, there's some kind of transmissions, and they establish that the Death Star plans are too big to transmit. They're probably using the KGRG network to try to transmit. I mean, because I don't know if anybody's tried to upload a show that is more than 90 minutes, it takes a long time. I feel like whenever I do an episode of my show, I'm trying to upload the Death Star plans. It's like, okay, 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 you know, load. You have to align the satellite dish just right. There's a dude with a cape coming after you, and then you're saved by Captain Ex Machina, and who we thought was extra dead earlier and apparently wasn't.
Well, I'm sure we're going to get a fuck you by the book explanation for how Vader was able to track Leia's ship without the transmission.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
That's a single issue comic book that I think is okay. I mean, I dig that shit. That in between. And again, that's what this movie is.
Yeah, this whole movie.
And I think that's why it resonates with me so much, because I like these, let's figure out a way to plug this plot hole, or, you know, let's find out what happened. How did they get the plans specifically?
Well, before Rogue One, the explanation for how the Death Star plans got a hold was the Dark Forces video game.
Oh, that's true.
The guy
Kyle Carton, yeah.
Yeah, and the first mission is stealing the Death Star plans.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And then we get the awesome Dark Troopers that are no longer canon. Thank you, Disney.
Okay. Anyway, RIP the previous EU. So let's, I think at this, what'd you guys think of the music? The music score?
Oh, I thought it was nice. Because it reminded me a lot of the original film.
It was almost kind of like a good cover.
Yeah.
In a good way, because the hallmark of a good cover is something that reminds you of the thing that it's doing, but still kind of lives and breathes on its own in its own space. And I feel that's what this music score did, because it's like, you know, you get like the melody of the Imperial March when Vader shows up, but you don't get it explicitly. It's like some of the instruments are different, the tempo is a little different.
It keeps it fresh.
I would compare this soundtrack to the soundtrack for Jurassic World.
Okay.
It's got the cues.
Yes.
However, the new stuff, it's not memorable. The original trilogy,
yeah,
you could hum, there's the certain parts thing, that you could hum. Like the Fiend, like you go, or that was the Empire stuff.
Yeah. but I get you,
but,
you know.
But like with this movie, There's no melodies that I remember. Like I seriously do not remember the Rogue One soundtrack aside from the recycled material.
Yeah, like the piano version of the Luke theme and things like that. Yeah, no, I get you. Fun fact.
That's the same problem I had with the Jurassic World soundtrack. It's just,
yeah, it has the cues, but yeah, no, you're right. The composer wrote the score in 4 weeks.
That might explain it.
They didn't give him enough time.
But he was brought in way late. Apparently they had a completely different score and a completely different composer.
Weird.
I found the information I was looking up. Yes, he also did the score for Jurassic World.
Ah, very good. Okay, see, I knew there was a connection there. So, I mean, his stuff is okay. It's serviceable.
It's just not memorable.
Right, yeah. So, yeah,
but,
I mean...
But yeah, I would attribute the four-week thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
That's not you can write music in that time period, but
it's not necessarily going to be great.
Yeah.
Right. Spree, do you got anything left on your notes that we may not have covered?
Just one thing, but it was more of a pet peeve from your podcast.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, please.
It's historical inaccuracy.
Okay.
Like when you were bringing up the Empire is based off Nazis and whatnot,
uh-huh.
And you brought up stormtroopers.
Yeah.
Stormtroopers was a World War I thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I stand corrected. I honestly did not know
Again,
that.
Again, that's just a pet peeve I have when it comes to historic history.
Really? Well, thank you for educating me on that. Yeah, so when Hunter and I were talking about it on the December 19th episode of my show, we were kind of talking about the Nazi imagery with the Empire, and we basically said, well, wait a minute, stormtroopers are kind of a holdover from, you know, from Nazi Germany. And turns out, thank you, Killing Spree,
from the research I've done, don't quote me on this because this was really quick, I don't think the Nazis did the stormtrooper stuff.
Okay, very good. So I think we should just go around the room one last time. Ooh, where would we like to start? Mickey, would you like to start us off?
Sure. So my closing thoughts are I thoroughly enjoyed the film. I would definitely go see it again, and I would bring friends to go see it. I thought it was a fun ride. I thought it's a good intro. I think of it as like a good... If you didn't see the original films, and you just saw the last film and then you go see Rogue One, I don't feel like you're going to be super out of the loop.
Okay.
You may be, but you're definitely going to be like, wow, maybe this Star Wars thing really has something going for it. Mm-hmm. Like, I see why there are so many fans. I can see why people like this so much. So I think that they're kind of making like a new generation of Star Wars fans with these films. Because I pointed out a few times that watching these made me want to go back and watch the originals.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's something that I thoroughly enjoyed about the film. Of course, I love the characters. Casting was awesome. I feel like a lot of the roles were filled well.
Yeah.
And I just enjoyed the movie overall. 8.5 out of 10.
Very cool. Killing Spree.
Like I said, it's mediocre. It's not bad. It's not great. It's a strong C.
Uh-huh.
Like, seeing it once just to see it. Yeah, I would say do that. Is it a movie that I'll go out and buy when it comes out? No, probably not.
Hmm. Okay.
But it's... I almost want to compare it to Alien Resurrection in the sense that it's an unnecessary movie. Like, it didn't need... It's nice to have it, but it didn't need to be. And based on Disney's track record with Star Wars movies, I think that's what we're going to get is decent enough. At least until I see some trailers for Episode 8, it's not going to be on my must-see list for 2017, unlike War for the Planet of the Apes or Alien Covenant.
So, for me, as I've said before, I really enjoyed the movie. I will be very interested to see how repeat viewings treat it. I get a feeling that the more I watch it, the more CG Tarkin is going to bug me. And especially now given today's tragic news, I think that the next time that I see CG Leia, it's going to yank at my heart in a way that it was not intended to when it was created. But I think it'll be there anyway. It'll just be, because it makes me think of what Disney might do. You know, and I cringe and it makes me fearful. But I got to see things in a Star Wars movie, like people being almost blown off the deck by rumbling jet engines, Star Destroyers crashing into each other, ships smashing into shields, gritty and dirty stormtroopers with visible blast marks on them, Vader unleashed, you know, actual people being killed, occasionally graphically. You know, it's the Dirty Dozen. It's the Magnificent Seven set in the Star Wars galaxy. It's the closest to Saving Private Ryan set in Star Wars that we're ever going to see. I wonder if when the movie comes out on home video, if maybe some of this stuff that was in the trailer that we never saw shows back up as deleted scenes or supplemental material.
Maybe like an extended version?
Maybe.
Original version. I was going to jump in on that. That is something that I forgot to mention, was that this is going to be one of those few instances where I hope there's going to be a director's cut. I want to see what Gareth Edwards originally intended. Maybe this will be like I don't think it's called a director's cut, but the alternate cut for Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, or the assembly cut for Alien 3. Like, it might make me like this movie better if I see what was originally intended.
Yeah, because I get the feeling that Gareth Edwards' original vision, based upon just what we saw in the trailer that didn't make it into the movie, Jin running on the beach, Krennic on the beach, you know, everybody on the beach. You know, it's a beach party!
Take the beach!
Star Wars beach
this
party!
This is Normandy, but Star Wars!
Normandy colon a Star Wars story. But,
oh my god.
But no, I think that there's a whole nother movie that this was going to be until Disney came in and said, okay, we have the courage to wipe out the entire cast. We're cool with that. We're okay with some of these characters being a little dark, you know, the occasional murder or two. But you know what? I got kids here. And you know what? We're going to throw some Marvel elements in it too, because you know we're going to I don't know if Gareth Edwards came up with all of those cameos. Well, I bet you they were just like, you know what?
Well, he wasn't the writer, so.
Right. Yeah, that's fair enough. But I bet you it's like, you know what? Throw in more Star Wars Rebels because we got a cartoon going on. Incidentally, Saw Gerrera is scheduled to show up in a upcoming episode of Star Wars Rebels, so look out for that. But yeah, not a heist movie, definitely a war movie, not as standalone as I would have liked, but I would watch it again and I would recommend my friends to do so. So that has been the Star Wars podcast for this year, 2016. My name is Mike.
I'm Mickey.
Killing Spree.
And Jay from Canada.
Oh, man. And until next time, make good choices.
Or don't.
Oh, you know, I have missed that.
I missed it too.
So much.
I'm one with the Force. The Force is with me. Yeah. I am one with the Force. The Force is with me.
I'm just hungry.
We've got to get sushi, girl. You're going to be okay.